That's Mark 1, 21 through 28. And they went into Capernaum, and immediately on the Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and began to teach. And they were amazed at his teaching, for he was teaching them as one with authority, not as the scribes. Just then there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit. And he cried out, saying, "What do we have to do with you, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." And Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be quiet and come out of him." And throwing himself into convulsions, the unclean spirit came out with a loud voice and came out of him. And they were all amazed, so they debated amongst themselves, saying, "What is this? A new teaching with authority. He commands even unclean spirits, and they obey him." And immediately the news went about everywhere into all the surrounding district of Galilee.
If you're already open, stay there in Mark chapter 1, if you will. Sure is good to see everyone here this morning. We got several visitors here this morning. We're grateful for you being here, and I guess I can speak on behalf of those who were sick last week. I'm glad to be back, and I'm sure that you guys are as well. You may not be glad for me to be back, but I am glad to be back. Before we get going, Pat and Maggie Knobloch, they wanted me to let you guys know and thank you for the sincere gratitude and the shows of condolences that you gave them this week, the passing of Pat's sister on Sunday, and they just wanted to let you know how much they really appreciated you guys doing that for them, and grateful that you did. This morning, we want to be looking in the Gospel of Mark, and I'm going to do something a little different than normal, but I want to start with a question first. When do you, or as I put it, when do I complain the most? Well, I realized this week when I was sick, when I am sick or I'm tired, I complain a lot. I don't want anyone to bother me. I don't want anyone to talk to me. I just want to be left to myself. I'm that way. Or if I'm needed, and I don't really want to be needed at that moment in time. Maybe I want to be needed at other times, but at that moment, just leave me alone. Or maybe it's when I'm hungry, right? Get in from work. Haven't had anything to eat, and the kids are yapping. Will you please be quiet? I'm hungry. Let me get some food, and I'll make that decision. Or maybe it's you're emotional. Maybe you've lost a loved one. Maybe something has happened at work or at school or whatever the case is, and people are just kind of getting on your nerves because your emotions are a little higher than normal. Or maybe it's because you've got expectations in somebody. You expected them that they were going to do a better job, and they were going to do something right, and they didn't do it. And you start complaining to others, they're just not living up to it, or whatever the case may be. And finally, as I think about it, crowds of people. Man, I get annoyed in a big crowd of people. I love sporting events. I love concerts. But I hate people. That comes out weird, but like when you're surrounded by people, and you have no control over your settings or your scenario, man, that's an uncomfortable feeling for me. I start complaining. They're touching me. It's hot. It's cold. Whatever the case may be, right? I don't really hate people. But I do. But you get the point, right? We complain all the time, and it's usually because of some kind of external circumstance. Well, this morning what I want to do is I want us to see something about patience. All these things require some form of patience. And I love the way Merriam-Webster defines it here in this very first one, of bearing pains or trials calmly or without complaint. We see that exemplified in the life of Jesus. And this morning we're going to be talking about the patience of Jesus. And I've subtitled that, The Life of a Celebrity, or The Character of a Celebrity, as we are thinking about our year with Jesus this morning, of how His life was always surrounded by people. This morning is also going to be a different lesson in this regard. I'm going to stay in the book of Mark, okay? And what we're going to do is I'm not going to do a lot of preaching. A lot of times what I would love to be able to do is get up here and read a letter and let the author make his point. This morning what I'm going to do is I'm going to highlight the circumstances of Jesus through some very well-known stories in Jesus' life. That way we can see what Jesus does is kind of an amazing thing because He had to give something up in order to do what it is that He did. And so this morning, my objective and my goal, the goals are, I'm going to use Mark's narrative. So if you're there at page 528, if you're using a pew Bible, stay there. We're just going to go straight through the Gospel of Mark through chapter 10. So what we're going to do is we're going to cover the life of Jesus as Mark tells it up to the last week of His life. We won't address the last week of His life in this lesson. What that also means is if you don't like looking at your Bible, if you don't like reading your Bible, then you're not going to like this lesson. But what I hope is that you do like your Bible. You do like that, and so you will see kind of the things that I want you to see. Secondly, I want us to know this, and we're going to specify a circumstance. We're going to think about that a lot. And then we're going to show something that He had to give up in a lot of these situations. So that gets to you. What do I want you to be able to do? I want you, as you're reading through this, to be able to identify with Jesus in at least two of these circumstances. Where you'd be like, man, yeah, I had a similar situation like that last week. Or I can see this happening in my life. And then I want you to think about did you have to give up? Or what will you have to give up in order to have that mentality and that patience that Jesus had? So just be thinking about how you can relate to Jesus and what it would take from you, okay? Let's begin. Bill read that story for us, and this is kind of the way Mark begins his gospel. He begins off with a bang in Capernaum. He's at the synagogue and he's teaching and he casts out these demons and people are amazed by it and the word spreads out about it. He leaves the house and if you'll notice down in verse 29, he leaves the synagogue and he goes to Peter's house. And it's there where he heals Peter's mother-in-law. So you go down to verse 32 and so when evening came of the same day, after the sun had set, what happens? They began bringing to him all who were ill and those who were demon-possessed. And the whole city gathered at the door. I forgot to do one more introductory thing. What in the world are we talking about? What we're going to be seeing Jesus do a lot in Mark is he's on the go. He's on the travel line. So I'm always going to try to have a map up here. But Capernaum is the city on the north of the Sea of Galilee. And I forget how this little clicker thing works. And so we're not really going to worry about it. But Capernaum is up there at the top of the Sea of Galilee. Nazareth is his hometown, as you remember us talking about last month. That is where he grows up. So they're in this area, and that's going to be the focus. We're going to spend a lot of our time in that Capernaum-Nazareth area. So that you see that the whole city is gathered together there in Capernaum in this house. And what's he doing in verse 34? He healed many. What we are going to see in the life of Jesus, we are going to see the crowds time after time after time. After time, to the point where you just kind of get annoyed. I'm thinking, man, this guy never had any alone time. That's the life of Jesus. The crowds are gathered. The whole city is gathered. So when I looked it up, how many people lived in the city of Capernaum? I read something maybe like 1,500 people. And so you think, man, that's not a big crowd, man. 70,000 go over here and watch the Giants and the Jets play. Think about how many people live on, let's go two blocks that way and two blocks that way. Would we be amazed if every single person on those four blocks came here today? Absolutely we would. We're amazed that probably 150 people are here this morning. Imagine if all of your neighbors came. Like, man, that was awesome. You wouldn't believe how many people came. And they all came and they needed something. They needed some help. They needed some healing. So Jesus was there, and He was healing the people. Well, verse 35, early in the morning, while it was still dark, before the sun had even risen, the people come. come to him after the sun set. And before the sun has even risen, what does he do? He went away to a secluded place to pray. You think, oh, he's finally alone. He's finally by himself. So verse 36, Simon and his companions come after him. They say, everyone is looking for you. Can't get away. And he says to them, let's go. We got to go to other villages. I came to preach, so I'm going to preach. Well, the next story that we are told about, they just got to keep going. They went to a secluded place and everyone's looking for him. There's a leper that is healed in verses 40 through 45. And I just want you to see that this leper comes, and this leper, he is healed, and he's asked Jesus, can you heal me? And Jesus says, I'm willing. But notice what Jesus says to him in verse 45. He tells him, verse 44, don't go tell anybody, commanded it. But the man, verse 45, went out and began to proclaim it freely, as if no one had told him no. And the news spread around to such an extent that Jesus could no longer publicly enter a city. And he stayed out in unpopulated areas, and they were coming to him from everywhere. He tells the guy to be quiet. The guy ignores him, and because of that, he can't go into a city anymore. He's got to stay out because the crowds are unbelievable. Jesus was patient with the crowds. The only thing, man, the whole city was gathered together. Everyone is looking for you. Let them come to me. Let them come to me. Let's go to the other town. We've got to preach there. They'll find me. There's some patience in Jesus right there. He's not hasty in his decision. We go to chapter 2. Another man is healed. A paralyzed man is healed. You'll remember this story very well. It's the story where the friends, they bring their man who is paralyzed, and they have to cut a hole in the roof. And they left the man down in the roof. You remember why they had to cut the hole in the roof? It's because down in chapter 2, you read verse 2, there were many gathered together so that there was no longer room, not even near the door. And he was speaking the word to them. This is what we're going to see. We're going to see Jesus often teaching these crowds. In a moment, it will call it his custom to teach the crowds. That's what he was doing. And they couldn't even get to him because of the crowd, verse 4 says. So he heals this man. And after that, in verse 13, he went again to the seashore, up to the Sea of Galilee. Well, he calls Matthew, who is also called Levi, he calls him to follow. So that gets us down to verse 15. So he's eating with Matthew at Matthew's house. And as he reclined with him, man, I'm getting way ahead. That I'm not even keeping up with my PowerPoint. So if you're taking notes, I'm sorry if I'm not keeping up with you. He was eating with who? The tax collectors and sinners. But notice how many of them were. And that happened while he was reclining at the table in his house, and many tax collectors and sinners were dining with Jesus and his disciples. We're not talking about one. We're not talking about two. We're talking about there were many. And that's why they question him. Why are you eating with the tax collectors and the sinners? You're mastering for the tax collectors and sinners. He's got a crowd of those people following him as well. There's just all kinds of people. So Jesus withdrew to the sea, as you see in chapter 3. He goes on to the sea, and I can already tell that my map is not correct anymore because it's sitting on the backside. So that's going to be a problem in a minute. Because we're going to see that he goes to the sea, he withdraws, but he goes and first he heals a man in chapter 3, verse 1 at the synagogue. But in chapter 3, verse 7, notice this. Jesus withdrew to the sea with his disciples. And a great multitude followed. And also from Judea and Jerusalem and Idumea and beyond the Jordan and the vicinity of Tyre and Sidon. And a great number of people heard all that he was doing and came to him. I've got to change this on my slide because you have to see the importance of where all these people are coming from. These people are coming from all over the place. They're coming from the north, from the south, from the east, from the west. It's no longer just around his hometown anymore. We're no longer in the Capernaum and Nazareth there. We have now gone over pretty much that whole map. That's how widespread Jesus was known in a matter of both days, months, because of through there, and the great multitude followed from all these different places. And so he's teaching them by the sea. Remember, he withdrew to the sea. So notice in verse 9 how it affects his ability to teach. In verse 9, he told his disciples that a boat should stand ready for him because of the crowd, so that they would not crowd him. He can't even teach the way he wants to teach because there are so many people. So he sits out on the boat, and he will do this customarily, and he will teach while the people are on the seashore. Just see how many people are there with Jesus. And it's at this point where he chooses his 12 apostles. He calls them, he goes to a mountain by himself, and he summons them, and he calls them to come up. So verse 20, they came. And he goes to his home, which is in Nazareth, right? And guess what happens again? And the crowd gathered again. Now let's see our new statement. To such an extent that he could not even eat a meal. Now, men, we probably relate to this better than women do. But as I said, when we come in, we want some food in our belly. Jesus is so busy teaching. And there are so many people around him that he can't even eat. We get caught up in our work like that sometimes, don't we? Where, man, we're just going and we don't even realize that we missed a meal. I imagine this wasn't one day that he didn't. I imagine this is probably over a period of time because it's so bad that they call his mother and his brothers and say, hey, you go talk to him. See if you can get him to eat something. That's all they do. They go to him and they call for him. And someone comes to Jesus and notice what is happening with Jesus down in verse 32. A crowd is sitting around him. But in verse 31, his mother and his brothers arrived and they stood outside and they sent word to call for him. He said, aren't you going to eat something? He said, who are my mother and my brother? But those who do the will of God. Jesus uses this opportunity to again teach the importance. But notice that crowd sitting around him. That gets us to chapter 4. Chapter 4, Jesus begins teaching in these parables. And we are very familiar with so many of the parables. But it's at this point that he begins teaching the parables. Notice, again, who is around him. And such a very large crowd gathered to him that he got into the boat in the sea and he sat down. Happens again. It's not a one-time isolated incident. Here it comes again. And he teaches these parables. And so he explains the parables. And you remember how the parables often happen? People didn't usually grasp the parable. He told the parable and they would be like, how do we know that? Well, because his own disciples didn't even know that. Notice down in verse 10. As soon as he was alone, he finally got alone. The crowds are finally gone. As soon as he's alone, what's happening? His followers, along with the 12, began asking him about the parables. I don't know if he thought this, but I know I would be thinking. Man, I'm done teaching today. I'm going to sit back. I'm going to relax. I haven't eaten for a while. I'm tired. And it chimes up old Peter over there. What are you talking about? And then he goes on and he explains the parables. And he goes on and he gives some more parables. And this very cool statement is given about the way Jesus was teaching them in their parables. Of how the statement is made that he gave it to them as they were able. Look at verse 33. And with many such parables, he was speaking the word to them so far as they were able to hear. Again, his patience as a teacher. His circumstances haven't always been great. His audience doesn't always understand what he's talking about. But he is patient with them. He brings them along and he teaches them as they are able to understand. That's hard sometimes for a teacher to do. You want your students to be on the same level where you're at. You want them to know the same things that you know. But they're just not ready for it. That requires patience. And so Jesus leaves the crowd in verse 36. On that day, verse 35, when evening came, he said, let's go to the other side. So he said, let's go to the other side of the sea. So they left the crowd. Finally, we're gone. And they took him along with them in the boat. And he was there. And the other boats were there. Remember, this is the time where he might have been sleeping. And they say, Master, do you not care that we're perishing? And he wakes up and he says, peace be still. Well, they get to the other side of the sea. Verse 1 of chapter 5. They came to the other side of the sea into the city of the Gerasenes. Okay, they escaped the crowd. They get out of the boat. And notice what happens in verse 2. When he got out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. And this is the guy who none of the locals wanted to mess with. He's the guy that they chained up in the tombs. And he would go about naked. And he would break out of the tombs. And he would break out of the chains and all that stuff. And he comes up to Jesus immediately. Notice that word in verse 2. Immediately when he got out of the boat. And he falls at his feet. And what does Jesus do? He casts that legion of demons that was in him into the swine of pigs. And the pigs go running off. And all the people in that area, they get a little upset. And they come to him and they talk to him and say, hey, get out of our area. And so, guess what he does? He leaves that area. It's just unbelievable. So they cross back over the sea. And I often say when you read the Gospel of Mark, if you're not careful, you'll get seasick. Because you're constantly going back and forth across the sea. Well, he crossed back over across the sea. What do you think is going to happen here? They got to the other side, and guess who gathers? A large crowd gathered around him. And he stayed by the seashore. And it's in this crowd that you will remember two famous stories. You'll remember Jairus. He is the ruler of a synagogue. His daughter is not well. And he comes to Jesus. And I get the impression that, like the man did in the Gerasenes, as soon as Jesus gets out of the boat, up comes the man with the demons. Same kind of idea I get here. Jesus shows up on the sea. And then here comes Jairus, comes up to him and says, hey, come heal my daughter. And so Jesus is on his way to heal his daughter. And you'll remember that this is when the woman with the issue of blood, who's had the flow of blood for 12 years, and she has spent all her money of trying to get healed, comes up to him. And she touches him. And he says, who touched my garments? And you remember the classic response of the disciples in verse 31? You see the crowd pressing in on you, and you say, who touched me? We see pictures online, or we maybe even seen it, where we've seen a celebrity in person. And there's a huge crowd around them. We're going to say, there's 1,000 people around. We'll just be generous. What do they always have? A bodyguard. Nobody is touching them unless they reach out and touch somebody in most cases. Jesus didn't have a personal bodyguard. He's walking into Mrs. Christ and said, what do you mean who touched you? Everybody's touching you. He said, I felt the power go out. If we're just reading through the Gospel of Mark, we might not realize how often this stuff is happening. This is a common occurrence of how Jesus is constantly bombarded with people. And so he goes and he heals Jairus' daughter, who is dead. And he raises her from the dead. And notice what, again, he tells them to do in verse 43. He gave them strict orders to tell no one about this. You think for a second, right? You just raised somebody from the dead. Wouldn't you want some people to know about that? You've been able to deal with the demons. You've been able to calm the sea. You've been able to do all these other amazing miracles. The paralyzed man, the man with the withered hand. Just keep going on and on and on. And now you do something that, man, I raised the dead. He says, don't tell anybody about it. I've thought about why he did that. I've thought about it. Because there are a lot more dead people than there are those who need healing. Everybody would be coming and saying, hey, come. Hey, that wasn't his purpose. He used those things in his teaching, but that in and of itself was not the purpose. This is a side note. This is the only time that we see Jesus tell somebody not to say something besides to one of his apostles. where they didn't say it. We don't know if they went about telling, but I assume that they don't based on the author not telling us that fact. Well, that gets us to chapter 6. They cross back over, and I've got no idea where I'm at on the chart here. He goes back to his hometown in Nazareth in verse 1. And you see in verse 2, he goes into the synagogue, and guess who are there? Many listeners were there. And so he goes and he teaches them there, and that's when he says no one is accepted in his hometown. And so he goes on to the other villages teaching in verse 6. So verse 7, he calls the 12 to himself. And he sends them out. This is finally where he calls them out. And he sends them out in their message. They're told to repent, teach people to repent. And so that's what they do in verse 12. And then we have a parenthetical statement here of Mark goes back and he tells us what happened to John the Baptist. How Herod had killed John the Baptist. And we find out at the end, we go down to the end of that story in verse 29, that the disciples of John the Baptist had taken the body and they had buried him. Well, verse 30. The apostles gathered with Jesus. The apostles have now come back from being sent out on their mission, and John the Baptist is now dead. I don't know if they know about it yet. But they get together and they reported to him, that is Jesus, all that they had done and taught. This is what Jesus says to them. Come away to a secluded place and rest a while. They needed rest. They had been out doing the work, and they needed this rest, and notice why. Because there were many people coming and going, and they did not have time to eat. And so they went away in a boat to a secluded place. It's now not just affecting Jesus. When the apostles were out doing their teaching, they didn't have the time to eat. There are people coming and going. So they go to a secluded place. Now, remember what relation John the Baptist was to Jesus? He was his cousin, right? Pat can relate to this. Many in the audience can relate to this. I can relate to I lost a close friend this year. When you lose someone that you love, how does that affect you? Are you as eager to go to work the next day? Are you as eager to get up and just keep going, just nonstop? Well, it kind of punches you in the gut. It hits you hard. Jesus is going to rest. They go to this secluded place to get some rest. But look in verse 33. But the people saw them going, and many recognized them. And they ran there together on foot from all the cities, and they got there ahead of them. They're trying to get away and they can't. The people recognize them and they go running. You're Jesus. You're on the boat. You see all the crowds forming. You're trying to get away from the crowds. What are you going to do? I'm turning that boat around. I'm going the other direction. I'm going to make them run. I'm going to tire them out. But verse 34. Jesus went ashore. He saw a large crowd. And he felt compassion for them. Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. Isn't that unbelievable? I'd be like, people, get away from me. I'll deal with you tomorrow. Let me have the rest of this day. I'll talk to you tomorrow. No, and this is when Jesus performs that amazing miracle. When he has got the 5,000 men there sitting in the crowd, he feeds them with the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes. This is probably the height of Jesus' popularity right here. Because after this miracle, John tells us in John chapter 6 that Jesus began some hard teachings the next day. Because they wanted to make him king. And Jesus begins to say, you got to eat my flesh and you got to drink my blood. And he said, well, this is a hard saying. Who can understand? And many of the disciples left that day. After what their master had done for them, they just wanted the loaves and the fishes. Did Jesus know that? Absolutely he knew that. John 2 says he knew what was in man. Acts 1 tells us he knows the hearts of all men. And yet, we're still going to see this man making sacrifices for people who don't really want what he's got to offer. But yet he still keeps going. He bears it patiently. He bears it without a lot of trouble. You keep going, they cross back into Gennesaret. They get back in the boat and they go back. So in chapter, verse 53, if you go down there, you can just see he does this. Verse 45, by the way, he went away to pray. After he sent the crowd away, he went to pray. And he sent the disciples on across the sea, and he was going to pass them by walking on the sea, but they got scared, and so he gets in the boat with them. So they get back across the sea to the land of Gennesaret, and they got out of the boat in verse 54, and immediately the people recognized him. And they ran about the whole country and began to carry here and there on their pallets those who were sick and to the place they heard he was. And wherever he entered villages or cities or countryside, it doesn't matter where he's at anymore, they were laying the sick in the marketplaces and imploring, begging him that they might just touch the fringe of his cloak. And as many touched it, they're running to him from everywhere. And wherever he went, they wanted him. And they were healed. That's unbelievable. That is amazing. The man cannot get away. And the faith of those people. You get to chapter 7, and the Pharisees, they come and they question Jesus. And this is where Jesus talks to them about, it's not what goes out of the man, that what comes in a man that defiles him, but it's what goes out of a man that defiles him. And so you see in verse 14 that he summoned the crowd to himself, and you see in verse 17 the crowd leaves. So we've got a time where the crowd is not always there, and so sometimes Jesus will call the crowd because he wants to say something to the crowd. Other times he'll send the crowd away and he'll go back to teaching his disciples who are close by. Well, if you go down, that gets us to verse 24. He sent the crowd away. In verse 24, he goes into the area of Tyre. If you notice, Tyre is up there to the top in the left. It is a Gentile-run area. And guess why he is going to Tyre? It's not to preach, because he went to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But where is it? Why is it that he goes? And he went away, and he entered a house, and he wanted no one to know of it, yet he could not escape notice. Again, I imagine he's wanting some R&R time, some close time with his disciples to teach them. But he can't get away. And so you have the Syrophoenician woman who comes up and says, "Heal my daughter." He says, "No." And she again shows her faith. And he says, "Man, this is amazing." And so he heals her daughter. And so he leaves in verse 31. He leaves Tyre. And he goes into the city, or into the area of Decapolis. Decapolis on our map here is all the cities not in red. Decapolis means 10 cities. So we're talking about a pretty large area. So we don't know exactly where they're at, but according to this map, it's these 10 cities: Damascus, Ganatha, Dion, Hippos, Raphana, Gadara, Pelea, Gerasa, and Philadelphia. Just get the idea. A lot of cities are involved that he's trying to escape to. He goes into this place. Oh, and by the way, you remember the guy with the legion of demons? He went about proclaiming in the region of Decapolis. So he'd already had some people laying some groundwork there. And so you keep going. So verse 32, a man who can't speak very well and he's deaf comes up to him. And Jesus heals him. But notice how he heals him in verse 33. Jesus took him aside from the crowd and told him not to tell anyone. Notice what he did in verse 36. But the more he ordered him, the more widely they continued to proclaim him. Yeah, don't tell anybody. But yet, they still go and they tell everybody. So in those days, in chapter 8, verse 1, in those days, again there was a large crowd. And it was to the point that they had nothing to eat. Third time's a charm, right? This is when he feeds the 4,000. When there are 4,000 men gathered there, not counting women and children, and he feeds them with the 4,000. And so he left, verse 10. He immediately goes to Dalmanutha. And the Pharisees, and they come to argue with him. So now they're traveling on the way again, verses 27 to 34. They're on their way to Caesarea Philippi, which is up towards the north of Galilee. So I imagine that's probably the area where they were at when they left Tyre and Sidon. They probably went over into that area. And it is here on the way to Caesarea Philippi that Jesus begins teaching about his suffering. It is here in Mark chapter 8, verse 31, where he begins to tell his disciples that he is going to suffer, he's going to die, but that he's going to rise from the dead. It is at this point that his teaching style really changes. Where we see him going from the crowd all the time to where we see him dealing a lot with the disciples and teaching with the disciples. And so he does that. And so he told them about this along the way. And so then notice verse 34, what he does as he's teaching his disciples, he summoned the crowd with the disciples. Jesus probably had some bit of a following him wherever he went. But also in the cities where they found out where he was, they came to him. So sometimes he'd be teaching the disciples. Other times he'd say, crowd, come to him. He would summon the crowd to him. Chapter 9 gets us to the Mount of Transfiguration. You remember the Mount of Transfiguration, Jesus only takes Peter, James, and John up with him. And remember what he tells them. He tells them when they come down, don't tell anyone about this. Go down, you can see this. In verse 9, don't tell anyone about this. And he gave them orders not to relate to anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man rose from the dead. There's our stipulation. Don't tell anybody until the Son of Man is rose from the dead. So they come down from the mountain, right? This amazing thing has just happened. Jesus has been transfigured before their eyes. They come down from the mountain, and you know what he finds? Surprise, surprise, a large crowd. Verse 14. There's a large crowd, and some scribes are arguing with him, so we now got an argument. And immediately, when the entire crowd saw him, they were amazed and began running up to greet him. Man just walked down the mountain. Man, apparently, may have been up all night. Comes down, and there the people are running after him again. Well, this is when he heals the boy who is often cast into the fire. He is cast with a demon. He's often cast in the fire, and the Father is worried about it. And Jesus rebukes his disciples. And he says to them, oh, wicked and faithless generation, how long am I going to be here with you? It's like, don't you get it? This is one of the few times where we just see Jesus be like, huh? He did it maybe a little before when he says, beware of the leaven. They say, oh, no, we didn't bring the bread. But he was talking about the leaven. He says, don't you understand? Or your heart's hardened? Jesus has put up with so much that it's amazing that this is the first time where he actually gets on his disciples. And so they get to the house, right? They leave the crowd. They get to the house, and it is in the house where they ask him, why couldn't we do it? He says, this one comes out with faith. With prayer and fasting. So, you go down, let's go down to verse 30. So he left from there. In verse 30, he went through Galilee. So he's on the road again. And he did not want anyone to know about it. And here's the reason why. 31, he was teaching his disciples, telling them about his suffering. So verse 35, he called the 12 to himself. 38, John comes to him and says, hey, we saw somebody casting out demons and he's not following us. And Jesus says, don't worry about him. He's teaching his disciples at this point. He's now in the final year. He is about to go to Jerusalem. That's what we're about to see. This is in the final days, so to speak. He's got only limited time with him. He's focusing on his disciples. And so he went to Judea beyond the Jordan. So, if you go down to Judea, down the bottom left, you go up above the sea, the Dead Sea, and you go to your right, that's beyond the Jordan. That's on the other side of Jordan, the east side of Jordan River. He goes down there, and notice what he is doing down there. If you go down to chapter 10, and verse 1, he went there, and the crowds gathered around him again. And according to his custom, he once more began to teach. There's our statement of it's his custom. Crowds come, and what's he do? He can't not teach them. He has to teach them. Taught them. And so the Pharisees question him, and this one he teaches about divorce. And they get in the house, and they're bringing little children to him. And the disciples rebuke them for bringing the little children to him. And again, he's got to teach in the house what he was teaching out there to his disciples, because in verse 10, they didn't understand it. So he got in the house, he didn't understand it. Well, you go down, we go out to verse 17. Notice our introductory statement of verse 17. He's setting out on a journey. You ever been getting ready for vacation? And the phone rings? Are you serious right now? Especially before the days of cell phones. I remember, man, we'd get up so early on Saturday morning, we'd be ready to go, and the phone would ring. I think, who's calling? They all know we're going on vacation. Jesus wasn't going on vacation. But Jesus was going to fulfill what it is He came to earth to do. He's setting out on a journey, and guess what happens? A man ran up to Him. Surprise, surprise. And it's that rich young ruler. He says, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And He takes that time to teach us that not only rich win the kingdom. And that we have to leave all, but with things that are impossible, man, are possible with God. And so he sets out for this journey. He's delayed a little bit. And so he tells this rich young ruler, and he walks away, and he's disappointed. Like, man, that guy walks away, and he's not following anymore. Like, well, okay, fine, sounds good to me. Remember, he looked at it with compassion. He loves it. That's difficult for him. So now in verse 32, he finally is setting on his way to Jerusalem. And walking, Jesus was ahead of them. They were amazed, and those who followed were fearful. And again, he took the 12 aside and began to tell them what was going to happen. This is the final time we see him tell them about what he's going to do to suffer. He pulls them aside, assuming that there is another crowd. And so this is the time when James and John with their mother come up and say, Father, grant us that one reign on your right hand and one on the left. And they're arguing among themselves about who is the greatest in the kingdom. And he's going up to die. Well, he's on the way to Jerusalem. And we get finally to Jericho, one of his last stops. He gets to Jericho, and notice again who is in Jericho, verse 46. He arrives and he leaves with his disciples a large crowd. And this is when Bartimaeus is crying out, and another guy, Son of David, have mercy on us. And notice down in verse 48, many were sternly telling them, stop crying out. Jesus says, bring him to me. And Jesus heals blind Bartimaeus in his reign. It is at this point where he finally makes it to right outside of the city of Jerusalem to Bethphage in 11, chapter 1, chapter 11, verse 1. It's now time where he enters the city of Jerusalem triumphantly on the donkey with the people spreading their coats and all the palm branches. Here's what I want you to see from what we just saw. Jesus was a man who constantly gave up something. I don't know about you, but sometimes I got to give up the hunger. I just can't teach you. Maybe I want some rest. Maybe I want a vacation. But I got to give it up because I've got to keep doing the work. Maybe it's that your students, your pupils, your friends, they don't understand it. So you got to take extra time to teach them again. Same thing over and over. Jesus constantly with folks around him. Jesus constantly giving up something. Did that for us. He gave up himself, as Mike pointed out. That's how he sums it up. He loved us to the point that he gave his life for us. I can be patient and give up some things. My comfort for the work of the gospel. My brothers and sisters, my family, and Christians, and neighbors, and whoever. Because Jesus did it, I can do it too. Let's strive to have that patience and that hard-working attitude of Jesus. You're subject to the invitation in any way. We'd ask you to come now and stand.